Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. When I was in high school, my grandparents, actually on both sides, went through a phase of researching their genealogies. And it was a really fascinating exercise, and I learned a lot about my ancestors through their process of doing research. I don't know if any of you have had the experience of doing that or the curiosity to do that, but I find that the exercise of discovering where you've come from, where you've been, will help you to get a sense of who you are, because you found yourself in the middle of some kind of a story formed and shaped by various people who made significant decisions along the way. It's interesting, though, that understanding oneself as part of a story, or even having the capacity to tell stories and hear stories, is becoming rarer and rarer. I heard an interview just last week with a man who wrote a book called Present Shock, and in the book he talks about what he calls the decline of narrative. In other words, that we can't tell stories anymore with a beginning, a middle, and an end. We can't hear stories anymore with a beginning and the middle and an end. And he contrasts different TV shows. If you've seen the TV show Lost, that's kind of an archetypal process of not telling a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. You have various snippets and you try to piece something together, but the beginning and the middle and the end just really don't exist. You contrast that to a story like Downton Abbey that has a very clear beginning, and we're in the middle right now, and we're assuming that at some point it will end. So what does that mean? I think as Christians, it's really important that we understand ourselves as part of a story. And so the question I have for you all today and for myself is, how do we understand ourselves as Christians as part of a story? It could be that you understand yourself as a Christian in a story which began with you coming to faith and you growing as a Christian and you headed to heaven. It could also be that you understand your story as a Christian is connected to a local church, maybe even this church. It could be that you understand yourself as a Christian as part of a story that began with a denomination, Anglican Church, English Reformation, something like that. But what I want to suggest today is that how we understand ourselves as Christians in light of a given story impacts dramatically how we live day to day. And in order to do that, I'd like to reflect briefly on our passage from Genesis 12 today about Abraham. Genesis 1 through 11 forms a story. And the story, of course, begins with creation, that God created the world out of nothing. He created human beings in love for the purpose of relationship with him and with each other. In Genesis chapter 3, humans rebel, and by the end, Genesis chapter 11, God's good creation, God's humanity, has been scattered, shattered, no longer able even to communicate with each other after the Tower of Babel. And so Genesis chapter 11 ends on a fairly depressing note. God's good creation, the humanity that God created, have been completely fractured and scattered. The story of Genesis 11 is not a hopeful story. But in Genesis 12, we see the beginning of another story. And that other story is the action of God beginning the process of reclaiming his broken creation. And he does that by calling one person. This person is Abram. Not yet Abraham, but Abram. And he calls Abram, and he says, Abram, this is what I'm asking of you. Uproot yourself from your land. Uproot yourself from your kindred. Uproot yourself from everything that is familiar, and go. So what Abram is being asked to do is dislocate himself from one story, the story of his family, of his land, and put himself into another story, the story of his relationship to this God who called him. And Abram, of course, responds with faith and obedience. And as he does, Abram is given a promise. And we see that promise laid out in the text this morning. He says, Abram, as you obey me, as you leave your story and begin another story, I will bless you. I will make your name great. I will bless your descendants and make their name great so that you will be a blessing. And so Abram responds to that call, trusting that it is through him and his descendants that all the peoples of the earth will be blessed. Remember, Genesis chapter 11 ends by listing off all of these peoples and all of these nations who are scattered and separated and fractured. God is saying, through you, Abram, I am seeking to bless all of these nations. So why is that important? Well, what we see in the story of Abraham, or Abram at this point, is a promise of descendants. And Abram is tested multiple times with this promise of descendants. You remember that at some point, because Abram and Sarah were quite old, Sarah said, well, it must not be through me, even though that's what God said. Maybe you could try to have a child with Hagar. And they go ahead and do that. That was a mistake. Well, finally, they have Isaac, and Abram and Sarah said, this is the descendant. And then you remember the story of Genesis 22, when God asks Abraham to offer his son as a sacrifice. So he was tested again. But, of course, God intervened, and Isaac, his descendant, gave birth to Jacob, his descendants. And you know Jacob had his sons, and then we have the people of Israel beginning to form. And then after the Israelites were in slavery, they were liberated. And it's at this point that Israel really becomes a nation. And so we have God's call to Abram, one person. And from Abram, we have a people that develops. From this people, we have a nation develop. But again, it's the call of this nation, it's the call of this people to be a blessing to the other nations around them. But as we read through the Old Testament, we find that that didn't happen. That the story of Abram did not turn out the way they anticipated. And so that presented a problem. But then we see a dramatic shift in the story, a dramatic change, and a surprising change in the story. And we talked a bit about this last week. So God calls to one person, Abram. This one person becomes a people, this people becomes a nation, and then the nation becomes one person. We talked last week about Jesus himself taking on the identity of Israel, really becoming Israel, because it's only as Jesus becomes Israel that he can be faithful to the call of Israel to be a blessing to the nations. Okay, so suddenly, when we come to the New Testament, all this talk about Abraham makes sense. Because the discussion among first century Jews was, how does one become a child of Abraham? Because the descendants of Abraham are those that God has blessed. The children of Abraham are those whom God is magnifying, is exalting, is blessing. So the question was, how does one become a child of Abraham? And in the Gospel of Luke, now, talk of Abraham is all over the New Testament, but I'm just going to give an example from the Gospel of Luke. Do you remember in the Gospel of Luke, the woman who had an issue of blood, and she touched Jesus, which would have made Jesus unclean, but what happens, of course, is that the woman is healed. And Jesus responds to this when he was criticized, because, of course, this happened on the Sabbath, which wasn't appropriate, according to the conventional wisdom. He says, this woman, a child of Abraham, has been suffering for 18 years. Now, the fact that this happened on the Sabbath was very scandalous, but what was also scandalous is that Jesus referred to this woman as a child of Abraham, because she was ceremonially unclean, she didn't have access to the temple, she was alienated from community, but she is nevertheless a child of Abraham. As you go on further in the Gospel of Luke, you hear the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. Do you remember this story? Sometimes it's called Dives and Lazarus, and as you Great Heart students and teachers, many of whom are on spring break, so you may not be here, but the Latin divus means rich person, and so Dives is in his name. It just is a descriptor. He's a rich person. But the scandalous nature of this parable is that Lazarus, this poor man who laid outside the rich man's gate, this poor man is in the presence of what the text calls Abraham's bosom. And so he's present with Abraham, but the rich man is actually separated and apart from Father Abraham. And so the scandal of this story, again, is that this poor man, this sick man, is a child of Abraham, while this rich man, which is seen as a sign of favor and blessing from God, was apart from Abraham. Final example from the Gospel of Luke is the story of Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus was a wee little man, as we all know. But the story of Zacchaeus is a beautiful picture of God calling a sinful person, God showing up in the midst and in the presence of this sinful person. And it's only the presence of God that prompts the sinful person to begin to change. And after God shows up at Zacchaeus' house, after Zacchaeus repents and changes, Jesus says, "This is a child of Abraham." So if we understand this story that began with the call of Abraham, suddenly, reading the New Testament, this talk of being a child of Abraham makes much more sense. So then we jump over to Paul, and especially his correspondence with the Galatians and the Romans. Of course, we have a reading from Romans chapter 4 today. And a lot of times we read Galatians and Romans, and all this talk about being a child of Abraham may not make a lot of sense. It may not seem relevant. But the question in the early church was, again, remember the early church, they were all Jews. The question was, how does one become a child of Abraham? Because it was the children of Abraham that were blessed and favored by God. And the conventional wisdom among Jewish Christians at the time was, well, in order to become a child of Abraham, of course, one had to become Jewish. And yes, Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, and so Jesus is central to now what it means to be a child of Abraham, but one needs to follow Abraham's example of being circumcised. This was a sign, of course, of God's covenant with Abraham. But Paul was so intent on affirming and really asserting in very strong language that the Gentiles, the nations, had access to becoming a child of Abraham without going through the hoops of Judaism. Because what Paul believed is the promise that God had made to Abraham that in his seed, in his descendants, all the nations of the earth would be blessed, that happened in and through Jesus. And so the nations or the peoples or the Gentiles could relate to Abraham as his children through Jesus without becoming Jewish. And so Paul believed that this promise that God made to Abraham, that in him all the peoples of the earth would be blessed, happened independent of the identity markers of Judaism. So the story of Abraham culminates and climaxes on the cross and in the resurrection, when the nations were invited into a relationship with the God who created them, with the God who loved them. And now they could be members of God's people. They could be children of Abraham, not going through cultural and religious hoops, but simply on the basis of their relationship with Jesus. That's why Paul thought that this was so important. And so what does this mean then for us? You may say, well, that's neat, some insights into reading Romans and Galatians, and now Zacchaeus will be maybe a more interesting story to me. But what does this mean for us today? Well, here's one thing. There's a great story about Gordon Fee, who's a New Testament scholar who's at Regent College. He was listening to a talk by Eugene Peterson, who is another professor at Regent College, and Eugene Peterson told this story. And the story that Peterson told was about his grandchildren. Now, knowing several grandparents, I know how much you like to tell stories about your grandchildren. But Eugene Peterson told the story about his grandson, and his grandson looked up at him and said, "Grandpa, can you tell me a story, but put me in it?" In other words, his grandson wanted to be part of a story and invited his grandpa to tell that story. And Gordon Fee, sitting in the audience, says that he just began to weep because he knew that the God who created heavens and the earth was telling a story, and that he had invited Gordon Fee himself in to that story. But as I mentioned before, it's so important that when we understand ourselves as part of the story that God is telling, that we understand what story God is actually telling. And that story that begins with Abraham is a story of God's desire to bless and heal the nations. And if we understand ourselves as part of a story that's primarily about us, primarily about our local church, primarily about our denomination, then we're believing and living in the wrong story. Because the story that God's telling that starts with Abraham and goes to the people of Israel and the nation of Israel, but focuses in on the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, that's the story that we're called to live in. And it's a story of God's desire and God's heart to bless the nations. And so as we seek to live in that story, that has major implications in how the church ought to function. And what this means in my mind is that we as the church are called to live for the sake of the nations. We as the church, as the people of God, as children of Abraham, are called, as the text in Genesis 12 says, to be a blessing. I was reading this last week Leslie Newbegin's book called The Gospel in a Pluralist Society, which was hopefully next to the Bible, one of the more influential books in how I think. If I ever say the most influential book in how I think, please correct me on that. But it's one of the most influential books in my life. And Newbegin is making the observation that Western culture is shifting. And the shift is from a culture in which one could assume that most people around were functioning under basic assumptions of Judeo-Christian worldview, it's shifting to something else. And if the church continues to try to function as though everyone around them observed basic Christian principles, then we are in denial. And the denial is not healthy. And so Newbegin is calling the church to pivot. And he's calling the church to let go of the paradigm of Exodus, we're in the promised land, to the paradigm of exile, we're aliens and we're strangers in our land. But what did God tell the exiles in Babylon to do? Seek the welfare of the city. God said to those who were in exile in Babylon. Their temptation would have been to build walls to protect themselves. Their temptation would have been to hate the Babylonians for destroying their country and for bringing their people into exile. But God's word to them was seek their welfare. Because, he says, in their welfare is your welfare. And so Newbegin tells us or instructs us or encourages us to embrace the reality that our culture has shifted. The church needs to pivot and to embrace its identity as exiles who are called to seek the welfare of our city. Newbegin says that this new kind of church will explicitly and consciously exist for the sake of the city, for the sake of those around us. And again, if we decide to live in a story that is primarily about ourselves, about our local church, about our denomination, then we're going to fail in what God is calling us to do. But if we understand ourselves as part of a story that began with Abram, who was called to be a blessing to the nations, then we can embrace what God is doing in and through us in a way that God will be glorified and God will be honored and the nations will be blessed as we do so. So the encouragement that I will give to you all and to myself, the challenge that I will give to you all and to myself this Lent is to ask yourself what story you're living in. Are you living in a story that says God's people, the children of Abraham, exist primarily for the sake of those who aren't here? Or are we living in another story? And what would it look like for us to inhabit that story in such a way that we actually did exist for the sake of other people? I think it would dramatically change our church and other churches. And so the challenge that I'll give you is to spend this week praying and looking for the ways that we as a church, that you as families, can seek to bless and to serve and to love those around you. Do it as a child of Abraham. Do it as a follower of Jesus. Do it believing that God's desire is to use you to be a blessing to those around you. That is the story that God is telling. That's the story that God has invited us into, and that's the story that by God's grace will live. Amen.